95.7 Ben FM presents Her Story with Kathy Romano.
Welcome to Her Story. I'm your host, Kathy Romano. One of today's guests is a Philadelphia singer-songwriter who was inspired to pick up her fiancé's guitar after he passed away 20 years ago to find a way to voice her grief. Her debut CD received Billboard Magazine's Critics' Choice Award for Best Newcomer. The now married mother of two is here today to tell us her story. Please welcome Megan Carey. Hi, Megan.
Hi, Kathy. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, yeah. Thank you for coming by. I appreciate it. So you're from Philadelphia?
I actually grew up in Hershey, Pennsylvania.
Oh, I love Hershey.
Right? Who doesn't?
I mean, so if you live in Hershey, are you obsessed with Hershey Park like we are or not really?
I wasn't obsessed with the park, but I went to the park. I always had a park pass.
You had a season pass.
Yeah, I had a season pass. So I didn't become obsessed with other things. Like
right.
I didn't get into a lot of trouble because I could like go up and down and up and down and spin around and get really
right.
like that was what I did all day anyway. So
have you been back?
Oh, yeah. Okay. I take my kids there. My first ever job performing, singing, was at Hershey Park.
Oh, no way.
I auditioned for the Hershey Park Hoedown, and I was, hi, my name's Megan Carey, and I'm from right here in Hershey, PA. And no, we don't talk like this here, but I do, because it's a hoedown. So, yeah.
That's so funny. And you know what? I think that's why I love it so much, because I have a six-year-old, so going there with him is just so much fun. I love all of Hershey. I mean, I've gone back now since I've taken my six-year-old. He loves it. I've gone back and done the Hershey Hotel, did a girls' weekend. So I like it out there. It's really pretty.
And it still has its small-town charm. We're going out in May to play an art fest out there. We still go back and play. My mom and dad still live there.
You're a musician, but you didn't necessarily want to be a musician, or you didn't think that was where your life was going?
No, I had no idea. I mean, to be honest with you, when I went to school, I was always going to be a biomedical engineer. I was like a math and science kid at a time when a young woman who was really interested in and good at math and science was like, oh, encouraged, do this, you know, this is unusual kind of thing. And so I went off to Duke University and I was pre-med and I ended up coming out with a drama degree. Because I had this crisis of right brain atrophy. Like my right brain screamed, wait, stop, you have to use me, you know, stop with all this left brain analytical stuff. You need to be creative. And so I did this 360, or I guess it's a 180, came out with a degree in drama. I went off to acting to a conservatory and became a professional actor. And I thought, well, that's okay. That's this big change in my life. That's enough. Right. And then I met Matthew, and he was a musician. I met him doing a show. He brought music into my life, and I really loved it. I used to sing with him, and he would play cover tunes and all the cover tunes you love to raise a beer to and, you know, cry into your beer. And I would sing along. So I knew the chorus to a bunch of songs, the words to the chorus and mostly the harmony. And I didn't know any whole songs. And I loved it. And when he passed away, I didn't want to lose that too. I refused to let that go because I knew I could have it if I wanted it.
So what's the story behind his death? How did he die?
So he died very unexpectedly. He had bipolar disorder and he was on a bunch of medications and they were moving him off of a set of them and onto another set. So it was at a kind of a vulnerable time in his healing process. And he went out and had a couple beers and his heart stopped. So
the combination of the medication and the alcohol?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
How old was he?
He was 27.
Oh, so
when
young.
He passed away. Yeah, so young. And he lived such a great life up to that point, like such a fun life. But he also suffered from bipolar disorder, which is a really, really tough disease. I was able to come to peace with the idea that he's much happier now. He's in a much better place. It took me a while to find my way there. I understood that it was his time to go and he's in a better place, but I wasn't really ready to lose him. So I had to work through all of that, and I picked up his guitar and I wanted to make music and I didn't know any music. So I wrote my own, and I wrote, obviously, my story, which was what was going on right there in that moment.
Losing him.
Mm-hmm. All of my early music was about love and loss and moving through and letting go and claiming peace. And then eventually came to the other end where it lands now, which is in finding joy in life. It's my music is much more joyful now. than it was then.
Than it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
Some people compare you to Melissa Etheridge. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah. That's a vocal thing. That's a vocal and stage presence thing, I think. I tend to put on a big stage show and we get rocking a little bit.
So what type of music is it?
I'd say it's folk music. It's also, it's rootsy, Americana. Some of it goes to a little almost country rock.
That's what I thought. It definitely folk and country.
Yeah.
Is what I heard in some of what I was listening to. And your voice is very strong. I like your, even your deep speaking voice.
Yeah. That used to get me in trouble when I was an actor because I looked like this total ingenue, you know? And then I would open my mouth and they're like, oh, yeah, that doesn't fit.
So musically, who inspires you?
At that time, the people that I was listening to were the Indigo Girls, who are phenomenal musicians, you know. So the Indigo Girls and Sean Colvin and Jonathan Edwards, all these really folky people. And I think that's partly, too, because when music was brought into my life, it was brought into my life by a guy with a guitar. So what does a guy with a guitar singing solo usually do? It's those kinds of songs. My favorite artist right now is Lin-Manuel, you know, who did Hamilton and In the Heights. I just love his entire style. I'm also writing a musical, so it might be that I'm, you know, my head's kind of in that.
That's
that
where you
mode.
Are right
yeah.
now.
So, yeah.
So you're writing a musical.
I am. I'm writing a musical. I've been working on it for 3 years now with a team in New York. When I was in New York City as an actor, I met this playwright, and it was when I was a baby actor, and I used to do a lot of readings of his plays. And he wrote these characters that were just perfect for me. So I did a bunch of readings and Eric Lane's plays. And we stayed in touch a little. I didn't realize that he was listening to my music as it was developing. And he called me a couple years ago to ask if he could use some of my songs. Then he called back a couple months later and wanted to know if I could sort of rewrite some of the songs. And I was like, sure, you know, to make them fit into the musical more, you know, more perfectly. And I was like, oh, yeah, sure. And I knew this call was coming a couple months later. He said, you know, do you think you could, I've got some other songs that I need to have for the musical. Do you think you could just write them? Can we just collaborate on this? And I was like, sure. But inside, I was like, I don't know how to do this. I've never done this. And I was in a panic because I had no idea. And then I just did it anyway, which is what I tend to advise people to do. If you don't know the words, sing louder. If you don't know what you're doing, just dive in and do it. So now I'm writing a musical with this fabulous team in New York that includes the director of Mamma Mia on Broadway and the musical director of Avenue Q on Broadway. And like these people that are immersed in the Broadway way. And I'm writing a musical with them.
Listen, nobody knows what they're doing in the beginning. So everybody's got to live that way. So how many albums have you made?
How many albums have I made? I've made New Shoes, which was my debut. And then Onion Dream was my second one. And then I made a little one that is no longer available called The Lost Ones. And it was just a fan CD made of all the songs that weren't on albums. My live CD called Live at Your House was a recording of a house concert, building this house. And Sing Louder, the acoustic, the festival EP, which was just my acoustic trio, and then my newest record, Sing Louder. So that's seven, but only five of them are available.
Okay, only
now.
Five are still mm-hmm. available. And where are they available? If people want to hear your music, where do they go?
You can find it everywhere. You can find it on iTunes. You can find it at CD Baby. I would recommend going to my website because then you can see videos, you can listen to everything, and that's at megancarey.com.
Tell me a little bit about the title track then, Sing Louder. That's the one that I listen to.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, so Sing Louder, I can tell you the story about how I wrote it and then what it's become. So the story about I did this thing a couple years ago where I decided to write a song a week just to keep myself going and keep myself writing and producing content, because sometimes it's really easy to get stopped by, you know, you get started into a song and, oh, no, this isn't good enough, so I'm not going to finish it. Well, I had to finish a song a week, which meant it didn't have to be a good song.
It just was a song a week?
Right. It just had to be a song.
And that seems like a lot.
It was a lot. And I wrote some really bad songs that will never be heard. But I also wrote a few that are now fan favorites. One of them was I was scouring Facebook. I would look to see, you know, if people posted things that would inspire a story. I saw this post. It was a rainy day in Philly. Another musician actually was posting about this horrible thing that happened. She lived in an apartment building and the woman who lived above her was over 100 years old. She lived to be over 100 years old and she was a piano player. And my friend knew this because she heard her playing piano through the floor every day. Every day this woman played piano, and they ended up meeting and striking up a friendship. And the woman said that when she passed, she wanted my friend to have her piano.
Oh.
So she did die, and people came to move all of the woman's stuff out. And my friend went upstairs and asked the movers, you know, could you please bring the piano to me because she wants me to have it. And they said, well, do you have that in writing? So she's like, okay, I understand. I need to do that. So she went down to take care of trying to figure out how to get this piano. And then she heard the sickening sound of a piano being tumbled down 4 flights of stairs.
Oh, my gosh.
And then it was put out under the curb in the rain.
Oh.
And so she was writing as it was being rained on. And, you know, destroyed anyway, and the curb. And I thought, I've got to write a song. So I ran into my living room, which was the living room at the time. Now it's just, we've given it up. It's the music room. It's got all of our musical instruments. And I picked up a guitar that I hadn't opened up in a long time. And there was a song sitting in it. Do you know what I mean? Like sometimes you pick up an instrument and there's just a song waiting for you there to be written. So I wrote that about this guitar. It was Matthew's guitar. So I wrote that song, and it was sad. I was like, okay, well, now I got to write the song about the piano. And I've already written a sad song, so I'm not going to write a sad song. I'm going to find the joy in this song. And that's how Sing Louder was written, is I found the joy in that story, which is the joy of a woman living to be 103 years old and playing music every day. And I wondered, you know, what must be her philosophy of life in life?
Well, and maybe that's why she lived to 103.
Exactly.
Right?
Live what you love what you do, laugh with your friends, cry with them too. That has got to be how you live a full life and a long life.
I heard you off the air before we started talking about you never go anywhere without an apple. Can you fill me in on that and what that's about?
Well, I never go. So I go some places without an apple.
Okay.
Okay. I do. I used to be a voiceover artist. I guess I'm still a voiceover artist, but I used to make my living and support my music habit by doing TV commercials and being that voice behind the.
Like jingles?
No, not singing.
Oh,
I didn't do
not
jingles.
Singing, just speaking.
No,
just
speaking.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, don't wash your dishes twice. Now there's
sure.
No electric only. That kind of thing. When you're doing that, you're on the mic for a long time and that. Sound of if your mouth gets dry, you
oh,
get a little
that's the worst.
That, you've probably talked to people and you're like, oh my god, well, like, have some water or whatever.
That's why when you guys walked in, I offered you a bottle of water. I do it to all of my guests just to make sure we don't have that sound. Yeah, you go ahead, you can drink them.
And I'm gonna drink some because I forgot my apple. So the acid in the apple cuts that right away. Plus, sometimes if you're, I'd be in the studio sometimes for 4 hours. And if you drink that much water, then you have to pee. You know, like, so you need, an apple is just, it cuts right through it. And
okay,
you don't
that's
have that
interesting.
Normal.
I never heard that about the apple. I think that can absolutely help me. I rarely eat anything when I'm on the air. I'm on the air for almost 5 hours every morning, and I usually don't eat anything.
You must be starving.
While we're on the air. I mean, I'm just used to it now. Right. Like, I'll eat at 11 o'clock. That's when I eat. But part of the reason is that. Now, I'll drink coffee. That also can dry your mouth out, too. So then I have the water, and I'm constantly going to the bathroom, too.
Yep.
But yeah, that's part of the reason why I don't have anything to eat, because then, you know, there's all different kinds of things that can happen.
Oh, yeah. They're like
but
little cracker
mouth.
But I
didn't hear that about the apple. That's
apples are great.
Good to know. All right.
They cut through.
Perfect.
Yes. So
definitely
and you
bring
could,
me an apple.
So you can have, you can like make a little bowl of sliced apples for all of your guests so you don't have to edit out that awful
sound.
Smacking sound. I hate that sound. Yeah.
All right. So tell me about your life now. You're married and you have 2 kids.
I am. And I just adopted a puppy because I'm a musician who travels all the time and so I need a puppy. Oh, my God. Okay. We'll get back.
You need something added to it all.
Oh, yeah, it's been kind of crazy. But anyway, yes, I am married. I actually married another musician. And I think that, you know, life works out the way it does. And I never would have met Peter, my husband, had I not been playing a gig. It's actually a CD release show for my second CD at a place called CBGB's in New York.
That
is no longer in existence. But yeah, he was in the band that played before mine. And we met and... It took us, we had to re-meet. The first time we met, I didn't get it. I don't know, maybe I wasn't ready. But anyway, so then we re-met and we fell in love. And he came into my life right at a time when I was getting kind of burnt out of making music. I'd been touring a lot alone and just, I was burnt out of the hustle because there's a lot, there's the performance, which I don't think I'll ever get tired of stepping on stage and connecting with an audience and drawing them in and taking them on the ride. I love doing that. But the hustle it takes to get those gigs, to get to those gigs, to make enough money at those gigs to get to the next one, I was really burnt. Then he showed up in my life and reinvigorated the whole music scene for me because he was into it. He was like, you know, watching me. He's like, you have all these gigs. Let's go do them together. And he didn't even play with me for a long time, but he just was like, you can't stop making music. This is really important. You have to do this. And he got me over the hump. And we got married and we have two kids and they're both incredibly musical.
Oh, they are. Okay. Oh, that was going to be my next question.
Yep. And you know, everyone asks, and it's not always the case, but it happens that my daughter, who is 12 now, she started playing piano when she was 5 and she could immediately play quite well. And my husband's a keyboard player. I don't know if it's genetic because I don't play at all. But anyway, I mean, I don't play piano. I'm a guitar player. So she started writing songs and she writes really beautiful music and she sings and she's really, really musical. And
have you ever performed any of her songs?
I have not, and I want to. I want to perform one of her songs. In fact, I am going to her voice teacher. We're switching for a month. I'm taking her voice lessons because I want to learn one of her songs. This month, she's learning one of our songs because she doesn't sing our songs with us. She sings cover songs with us sometimes, but so we're going to – I want to integrate her on some of our songs.
So your daughter will get up and perform with you at some of your shows?
Yes. It's not a regular occurrence yet. And then my son plays drums. And he's got the rhythm I always wished I had.
I love drummers. Anytime I go to a show, I'm always watching the drummer.
Right? And then I keep trying to tell him. He takes piano lessons too. And he's like, oh, I don't need to play the piano. And, you know, I'm going to drum. And I said, if you can be a drummer who can also, and he sings like a bird. And that, he doesn't want to sing. He doesn't want to play piano. He just wants to play drums. But if you can be a drummer who can also pull down that microphone and belt something out.
Sure.
And who has an understanding of melody so can maybe be in on that side of the creation, you're worth so much more in this business. So
you do a lot of coaching in the industry. Tell me about that.
I do. I coach people individually, and I also do workshops in performance, in songwriting, and in navigating the music business. The performance coaching, I really believe in the importance of connecting with your story and connecting your story with your audience and engaging the audience. I mean, after all, when people come out to a show, they're coming out to be entertained. They're coming out not because they just want you to feel good about making your music. They came out to have something happen to them. Performing can be, should be, a joyful experience for the person performing and the audience.
Are you still touring?
I still play a lot. My touring radius has narrowed because of the kids.
Sure.
But we play all over the Northeast and on the East Coast.
Do you have anything in this area?
I do, actually. I just booked a show at a place called Forest and Main in Ambler, and it's a midweek show, and it is May 9th, playing in Ambler.
All right. So before we go, what did you learn over the years that you could pass on to our listeners?
Oh, wow. Okay, there's two things. One of the most important things that I've learned is that we as humans are hardwired to connect. And when we share our stories, you know that thing that happens when someone is telling their story and you're listening and you're trying to put it in context and you can only put it in the context of your own story, right? So they're telling their story and you're living in your story. And then 9 times out of 10, you end up saying, oh, you know what? What happened to me was it was like that. And then you tell your story, right? And this thing happens, this connection. And when we are connected, first of all, it feels great to connect with other people. And second of all, that's how we can change the world, is by connecting and raising our voices together, being heard and sharing our stories. And then there's this thing that I just learned, which is that raising a puppy is really, really hard. And you don't get a lot of sleep for a little while.
All right. So speaking of connecting, I have to tell you this story because a guy that I work with, he just adopted 2 puppies.
Oh, my gosh.
And he comes into work every day and he's like, yep, well, he goes, they don't, why go outside? Why go to the bathroom outside? When you can just go in the house. He's like, everybody goes in the house. The puppies just go to the bathroom in the house.
Oh,
and his wife gets up every night in the middle of the night because they cry. And he found her one morning laying on the floor next to their crates, petting them to keep them quiet so that everyone could sleep. And she was sleeping on the floor.
Oh my God. See, this is the thing. And my husband, Peter, God bless him, he's always like, don't worry. Just let, you know, just put her in the crate and just forget about it. I'm like, you know what? It must be the mom in me, but I can't do that.
It's like putting a baby in a crib and then people telling you, well, you have to let them cry. Yeah, sure. Two seconds of that. And you're like, come here, mommy.
That's right. So I have to, sometimes like this morning, I said, Peter, I need a puppy free morning because I had to get my head together for a bunch of things that are going on.
Puppy free morning.
Because if I go downstairs to the puppy, I end up just, you know, oh, well, let me take her for, let me do some training. Let me play with her. Let me, and then, you know, then 2 hours are gone and that's that.
So I rescued two kittens and I had to set my alarm. I'm not kidding you. 10 minutes earlier after I got them, because that's what I was doing in the morning. I have two. So I pick one up, say hello, good morning. And then, of course, I have to pick the other one up, say hello, good morning. Like as I'm leaving, I have to say bye to both of them. They're the only ones awake when I get up to go to work.
Right.
So,
see, it takes time.
Yeah. I really had to change my alarm. In order to have 5 minutes with the kittens.
We've all been getting up earlier. And today I was like, I am getting a shower because I'm going to go and I may be on the radio, but I still don't want to like smell bad. So I've showered and it was like, it was such a grown, thank you. It was like such a grown up morning. So that's what life with puppy.
Life with puppies. That's what it's about. Megan, thank you so much for coming by to tell us your story.
Oh, thank you for having me.
If you'd like to see more about Megan, you can see her videos, listen to her music, or download it, or maybe hire Megan for some coaching. You can go to megancarry.com. It's megancarry.com.
This is Her Story with Kathy Romano on 95.7 Ben FM.
On Saturday, May 19th, a unique, fun, fashionable event is taking place in the city, Preakness at the Piazza. A live screening of the 143rd Preakness is to benefit the MS Society. And here to tell us about it is the event co-chair and MS survivor, Sheil Buddha. Hi, Sheil.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Good, thank you for having me on.
Yeah, thanks for coming by. So tell me when you were diagnosed with MS.
2014, I was diagnosed, and 2015 was the first time I went to this event. And I went to this event because I hadn't been going out, and I saw this. I was like, oh, like something with the derby, that looks fun. And then I was like, oh, I don't know if I should go out because you get this like fear when you get diagnosed. But then I said, oh, it's for MS. I have to go. It's my MS anniversary. And I went, and I was so wowed by the event. It's so much fun. And then after the event, I got on Twitter, actually, and I was like, how do I get on the committee? And someone answered me back, and then I joined the committee after that.
And now you're the event co-chair.
Yeah.
Tell me what your health is like today.
To be honest, it's different day to day. I always say that having MS is kind of like having a ninja that follows you, and you don't see it, but you feel it. And then when it hits, it's devastating. So last week, I had a really bad week, and I couldn't eat, and, you know, I was bedridden, and today I'm good, and that's kind of the nature of the disease, is it's on and off.
For people who might not be familiar, everybody's heard of MS, but explain a little bit about what exactly that is.
MS is a neurological disease, and so I describe it as having short circuits between your brain and your body. So there's days where some people have optic neuritis because whatever's controlled by your brain is affected by MS. And so for me, the first thing was I lost function in the whole right side of my body. And some people lose their eyesight. Some people start stuttering. Like when I don't feel good, I can't talk, or I slur, or I shake and tremble a lot. Or if I'm tired, I kind of look like I'm drunk because I'm like falling all over the place. You can't see it, but you feel it. And the fatigue is, I think, the most intense symptom of it. And people are like, you know, I tell people, like, I'm just so tired. They're like, oh, you know what? I have kids. I get up. Like, you don't get it because it, I wake
same.
Up this way. I have to take a nap after I shower. I have to take a nap to shower. And so we survive and we do well. But, you know, every day is a little bit of a struggle.
Now, do you have kids?
No, I don't have kids.
Can you have kids?
Yeah. You know, what's interesting is if you have kids, your MS goes into remission while you're pregnant. It's apparently really good for MS to get pregnant.
Tell me about your treatments, because you don't do traditional MS treatment.
No, I did. I'm allergic to all medicine. That happened when I got diagnosed.
All medicine?
Almost all the MS medications. I'm allergic to all painkillers and all antibiotics except one.
What? So what happens to you?
I get anaphylaxis. So I have to, like, you know, I can't breathe. I go to the hospital. They have to do all the stuff that they do. And one of the medications put me in septic shock. It was tough. And, you know, a lot of them, and not everyone has this. It's just, you know, me. And so I went to India and I learned holistic treatments, and I was a little bit afraid to, but I got one MRI done, and you know, I lose function in my legs when I get MRI sometimes. And my MRI tech also does the holistic thing and also has MS, and she's like, I think you can do it. And so I took the plunge of stopping treatment, and I've been off treatment since 2016.
Tell me then first about your trip to India.
I go every year, December to like March. And so I learn different holistic treatments and stuff. And I'm just trying to do whatever I can. I learn, I volunteer, I get treated. I do like acupressure, Reiki, Ayurveda, pranic healing, sujog, acupuncture, like everything that I can do. And I got certified because I was like, I don't want anybody else to go through what I'm dealing with. So I can treat myself and treat everyone else. And so my whole thing is you go through things because you're meant to change them. And so I'm doing the holistic thing and then I'm doing the MS Society thing because I feel like between the both, one day I'll be able to say I used to have MS, and everybody else will be able to say that as well.
So when you're in India, you're actually receiving these holistic treatments. You know, you mentioned acupuncture and then you rattled off a bunch more that I didn't know anything about. So just tell me a little bit about those treatments. What is that?
So sujog is one of them, and that's hand and feet acupressure, acupuncture, but it also uses seed therapy, magnet therapy, crystal therapy. So you can diagnose a person off their hands. Like I know if I have a client, I would be like, oh, like someone will say they have a stomach ache, and I'll say, no, actually your problem is over here because the pressure points are there. So I use those. I use Reiki, which is the energy healing, and pranic healing is another energy healing type of thing. And Ayurveda is the science of nature, basically. And so you use different foods, foods as medicine, different oils, aromatherapy, all those things actually started with Ayurveda.
So did you completely change the way you ate once you were diagnosed?
Everything. I used to love eating unhealthy, and now I can't. At all, but I have my cheat days because you have to have fun. But
yeah, of course. If you do have a flare up, then what happens to you? Each time do you lose? You said your right
Not
side?
Not each time. Each time is different. This time my stomach stopped working. Basically, everything gets really slow and it cramps up and everything. But sometimes it's my legs. Sometimes it's my eyes. Sometimes it's like a little flare, like where I'm driving and I call it brain fog. So like I'll just take like five wrong turns when I'm just making like a left to my house. So like I'll be like, okay, my MS is acting up today. I should probably get home. Like I said, I stutter sometimes. Sometimes I get really shaky. It's really embarrassing because sometimes I'm brushing my teeth and like the brush will fly out of my hand and I have one of those vibrating ones. So it's different. Sometimes it's just really tired. Like I'll be eating and my mom is my saint. So there's times that I just can't feed myself because I get just too tired.
So your mom's there to help.
Yeah, she helps me a lot. It's different every time. I think everyone's a little different. Your motor skills get affected a lot. And so for me, it's different. Everybody is a unique case. And so that's why it's really important to get the research up. You have an intimate relationship with your doctor. They go through your whole body. They touch everything and they see what's off and what's not. And you have to do all these things. They call it the snowflake disease because everyone is so different. So they know a lot, but they don't know anything because your brain affects everything. So they can't tell you what you are going to feel and what you're not definitively, because it's different every single day. So meditation helps a lot.
So you meditate. Can you exercise?
I do, but very gently. I heard that it's really helpful, but in the beginning, you feel like you're dying more than most people. But
do you do yoga?
Oh, yeah. I'm a yoga therapist as well. So I do yoga every morning, even if it's like a little bit. If there's days that I can't walk, I do chair yoga. And I think that's, you know, everybody has their whatever you can do that day, I do.
So if you do have a flare up because you don't take traditional medicine where you're actually swallowing a pill, what do you do then to help you through that?
If it's a significant flare up where I've lost function, I have to go to the hospital and my only option is getting 3,000 milligrams of steroids and they just pump your system with that. But that's not really a cure. It just kind of calms your immune system down. But what I do at home is I meditate right away. I do my acupuncture needles and I just really calm down, and my food, I keep it really, it's called a grounding foods. I do that. And
what is it called?
Grounding foods. So like things that are easy to digest, but are substantial. So like soups and like proteins and everything, but really easy to digest, but also high in protein and high in fibers.
How will this disease progress?
I don't know. And that's a lot of why research is really important. And it's scary. It's scary when you get a relationship. It's scary when you do anything because I don't know. I could be in a wheelchair one day for good, not just for a month. I don't know if I'm going to go blind. I don't know what my future entails. You just have to take it day by day. And I guess it's good because I'm really spiritual and I always believe that whatever is going to happen is going to happen. And it's going to happen any way or shape or form. And so if it's going to happen to me, I don't think about it. It's just if it happens, I'll deal with it then.
So mentally, that's how you get through it.
Yeah.
So what were the symptoms you first experienced that made you initially go to the doctor?
The right side of my body went, oh, this is really weird. Like, it feels like someone's touching my face. And so I went to the hospital and they kept me there and I ended up staying there for like 2 weeks. And then I lost function in my legs and I don't even know what was happening. Like, I don't think my mom was really scared. And for me, I was like, what am I doing in the hospital? For a month, I think I was on a walker and I couldn't really walk. I had to have someone help me shower. It's defeating and demoralizing and terrifying. I'm thankful my mind didn't comprehend what was happening. So I think it was a month and I started to stabilize. And then after 2 months, that was when the doctor was like, you definitely have MS, because I had two flares back to back. And so then I had that year of, I was like, I'm not getting up. I'm not going anywhere. I'm not standing up ever again. I'm not going to. And that was like my breaking point. I was like, I don't know what to do.
So
like,
you went through a pretty deep depression.
It was kind of depressed and angry. I was angry.
Yeah, sure.
And I was like, all right, well, like, what do you do? And I could go out with friends. And that's what is really cool about this event, because it truly was like the first time I went out. And so I get like really emotional. But it is. It's a big deal for me. And so I was like, okay, I can have this. It's been a year. Like,
I can go out.
I can do this. So I'm going to do it. And I did it. And I was fine. And I think that's a big thing, is like not letting fear take over your life. That's everyone, not just people with MS. Like, whatever it is you're going through. I think one of the best things, one of my therapists told me, she's like, kids don't stop walking when they fall. And that's kind of how I live, is like, you get back up. And this event did that for me. And what's really cool is joining this committee, because I couldn't work. Joining this committee was how I got back involved and how I started getting my confidence back. Like, oh, wait, I can do something. Like, oh, I can give back. Like, I have something to offer. MS might have changed my life, but it doesn't change who I am or what I can do, or it doesn't make me inept.
And you're young. How old are you?
I'm 30.
You're young, but this is a young person's disease, right?
Yeah, so people get diagnosed between 20 to 30 years old. I think 25 to 30 is their time frame. And I feel like the people who are older, like the older generation, they got diagnosed later only because they didn't know what they were feeling.
Right.
And so now we're in a time frame where people are like, wait, we have to get this checked.
So speaking of the event, the Preakness at the Piazza benefits the MS Society.
Yeah.
Is that correct? So tell me about the event and what all the proceeds go to.
Yeah. 100% of the proceeds go to the MS Society. And the MS Society is wonderful. They make you feel like you joined an exclusive club when you get diagnosed. Like, people call you. They do everything. They have retreats, actually, for us. Oh, like, why don't you come in and we'll teach you how to deal with your diagnosis, but also have a fun weekend. They do a lot for us. They pay for your treatments. The MS Society, if you don't have the money or don't have insurance, they'll pay for your MRIs. They'll do all that stuff. But this event, you're raising all this money for these people to live a better life, but you're having a great time. I have friends that came because they're like, okay, Sheila, I want to support you. But they're like, Sheila, this event is incredible. I had the best time ever. It's a great photo op. You're dressed up in this beautiful derby hats or fascinator. Guys are in bow ties and the suspenders and everything else. And so people are dressed. There's fashion judges. My first year, I did get nominated to get best dress. I didn't win, but you know.
Maybe this year.
Yeah, maybe this year. I got a better dress this year. So we'll see how that is. And what's
so cool, people go all out. They're
all
wearing
out.
The hats, the dresses, everything. Events like this are my favorite. For whatever reason, this attire, the Preakness Kentucky Derby attire, is my favorite to dress up in.
Who does it? It's like the most fun thing to dress up as. You feel like, well, what's cool is this year, I always say it's like you feel like you're in like London or something, because I feel like that's how they dress with the big hats and stuff. And this year, this event falls on when Harry and Meghan get married, royal wedding.
Oh, really?
So we like to think of it as the unofficial after party for
you're
this
reception.
Event. Yeah, we're the reception. They should probably come over and hang out with us. So it's a lot of fun. One of my bucket lists is to get to the Preakness, because who doesn't like dressing like that and being a part of an event like that? But this is the second best thing. Like, you really feel like you're transported there. There's one picture on the website. You'll probably see it. Everyone's staring at the screen, just as excited as if we were actually there. And there's betting boards, but all that money goes to the MS Society. So that's good too. After the race is done, people are dancing, networking. I've met the best friends I've ever had through this event, which is really, I've actually got a job through this event too with Philly PR Girl. And so I'm not working with them now because of health, but they've been like such a great asset for my life. And it's just fun. It's been raining the past 3 years, so hopefully this year it won't. We got all our bad weather out, and
seriously,
it's gonna
we just
be,
need good weather.
Oh my
from
gosh,
this
like please,
point
we can just celebrate good weather coming yeah. at that point. Like I'm just gonna be so happy. Summer's coming.
Where is the event?
It's outside at the Piazza. We do have tents. God forbid if it does rain or anything. But the past few years, it rained and people were dancing in the rain, like just having a ball. So,
and what's the times of the event?
It's 5 to 9:30.
And how do people get tickets? Can they just buy tickets at the door or should they get them ahead of time?
You can buy tickets at the door, but you can get it before the event as well. I think that's probably easier just in case they sell out or anything. What's really cool about this year, speaking about community and my friends, one of my best friends has a job with NFL Alumni and she came to the event last year. So this year, they are now our official VIP partner. The NFL Alumni will be there. And so we're going to have some former athletes involved and it's going to be even more spectacular. EBE, I used to work with them, and last year they helped us with the music video for the event, and this year they're our official entertainment sponsor. So I'm really excited about that, and their DJs are incredible. If you've ever been to an EBE event, they do a great job, and they're going to be doing our event this year. So I'm just really excited. I feel like we're in an era where everyone's doing something. We don't take no for an answer, and we have all these marches, and people are coming together, and this is just as significant, but we're doing it in a party form. But you're helping over 15,000 people living with MS in the greater Delaware area, and you're doing it by having a good time. And I feel like this is just as significant as that. And so I'm really happy to be a part of it, and it's really...
It sounds like it's a really cool event.
It's so much fun.
Okay, so with the purchase of a ticket, other than obviously entry to the party, what else comes with it? Is it open bar? Is there food?
It's open bar and it has food. We have great food and it's all Derby themed food. We'll have vegan options for those of you like me. And then we have all the food is just incredible. The desserts are incredible. Black Eyed Susan is our official drink. Tito's have been our official alcohol sponsor every single year. So that's really great. And we have, you know, the whiskey and everything else. Music, dancing, please bring your dancing shoes because everyone is out on that dance floor by the end of the night. It's so much fun. So,
and yeah. Obviously Dress to Kill because there's a fashion contest.
Yes. And people take that very seriously. You should see the fascinators and the hats that we've had. We had last year, I think, a mohawk type of hat that they somehow like weaved into her hair. It was incredible. People really go all out.
And how much are tickets?
So tickets are $89 for general admission and $165 for the VIP ticket. And then if you get a group of five or more, they're $79 a piece.
Oh, nice. Okay. Yeah. Now, if somebody can't go to the event, but they do want to donate to the MS Society, how do they go about doing that?
They can go to the website, www.preaknessatthepiazza.com. And it says, if you can't come to the event, if you want to donate, you could do it on the website. And we'd be very grateful for it.
What year is this for the event?
The 6th year. And what's really cool is that we've raised over $600,000 so far. So each year has brought in a little over $100,000. This event was started by Jeff Gross. He started this event because his best friend got diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. And so then he decided that what can we do about it? Let's make it a great time. And it's become this powerhouse of an event. And it's basically Philly's event of the spring.
So. And is he still involved with the
event? He is still involved. He's took a step down as a co-chair, but he's still heavily involved with the event.
Well, I think it sounds great, and I think people should come out to it. Sheil, thanks for coming by and telling us your story.
Thank you so much for having me.
If you'd like to find out more about the event, you can go to PreaknessAtThePiazza.com. Thanks so much for joining me again this morning. I'm Kathy Romano. Have a great rest of your Sunday.
This has been Her Story with Kathy Romano. Her Story is produced by WBEN-FM in Philadelphia and airs weekly or on demand on your mobile device. Listen or subscribe at 957BenFM.com.